Hi, everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to lead a more positively minded life. Welcome back. Welcome back. We did a special yesterday at 10 o'clock in the morning. But here we are again with you on our regular time slot, which is Tuesday and most Wednesdays, until the station straightens that out, here at WBAI 99.5 FM. Today, I want to talk about why people make the same mistakes over and over again. And you can see businesses who always seem to make the same mistakes. You can see radio stations that always seem to make the same mistakes. You can see people who always make the same mistakes. You can make the same mistakes in love, choices of friends, associations, professions, same mistake. You ever meet one of those people who have these ideas all the time? I'm going to start this business. Okay, now I'm going to start this business. Now I'm going to start. I have a plan. And you, after a number of years, especially if you're their mother, you say, you know, you should stick to one plan. You can say that all you want, but the ones who are these plan-driven people, they can't stay on one thing for anything. You say, go get a drink of water, and they'll be fixing the closet. You know, it's not one direction ever. So one of the reasons we ask is, why do we repeat our past? If somebody has paid consequences for being having their brain scattered in so many different directions, why don't they settle down? Maybe it's brain chemistry. Maybe just you don't have the juice to do it. Maybe you have an underactive thyroid or an overactive thyroid. Maybe you have some kind of bipolar condition. Maybe you've got too much testosterone. Something may be driving you physically, chemically, or something may be driving you emotionally. That's what we're going to be talking about today. Repeating the past. And why we repeat the past, why the drama goes on over and over again about the same stuff. Here we are again. A short while ago, we listened to somebody who was talking about how we're repeating the depression, how we're going back to the very same moods of the depression, you know, and here we are again with protests in the streets. Here we are again. Then we'll elect new presidents, presidents that will promise different, and here we are again. Now, I want to go back to the theory of why repeat our pasts. This is Armand DeMille with you, with my two assistants in the office today, Linda Vanella and Jonna Valerio, who Jonna is with us now as a student and apprentice, and Linda, of course, is my partner in crime. Hey, Linda, welcome back.
Thank you, Armand. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Jonna, it's been fun, huh?
Thank you, Armand, yes.
Okay, now listen, repeating the past. Okay, let's talk about Freud. Freud, who had a couple of good ideas and some bad ideas. Some bad ideas because they didn't work out to be true. One of Freud's bad ideas was that man searches for homeostasis. Now, what does that mean? That means that he believes, because he was originally a neurologist, that the nervous system is always looking to be at rest. And so what it does is it gets hyperexcited and it looks for discharge so that it could be at rest. He based a lot of his theory on this belief of homeostasis and the search for it. Later investigations kind of indicate that, you know, it's not, the brain's ideal condition is not homeostasis, but it's called ERP, the extra ever-ready potential. What your nerves want to do is ready to fire. Not flat, see? Nobody wants languid nerves. Nobody wants nerves that are just laying around. You want your nerves ready and sharp. And then you can relax behind that, because you know at any time you can respond. So that was the difference. That's where Freud made a mistake. However, Freud did have a theory about what he called repetition compulsion. He said, once you have a pattern of behavior from early childhood around which was designed the way you got love from your family in any form it was, even if it was brutality, how you got attention. Once you have that design in your mind, you're bound to repeat it. He said, people, you know, he said, so give you an example. A child, a young girl feels rejected by a father. She goes out with men who reject her. She finds them most attractive. The other day, I watched two young people who had just met each other for the first time, very attractive people. But he was very attracted to her, and he was kind of showing, not just physically, he was a very wise man, and he's showing all his attraction towards her. And she almost doesn't want anything to do with him. She kind of turns away from him. Yet, on the other, right before that, she had said, if only I could meet a man who was interested in me. But what she'll do is she'll go out with people who show disinterest. Because that's what she's used to. That's what she repeats. So you reproduce your family of origin, and sometimes you reproduce your ordinal positioning. It's called ordinal, which means your birth order. Let's say you're an oldest child. How did you get love from your family? You took care of the youngest kids. Now keep in mind, you're an oldest child. At one point, you were the only child. Then you had all their attention. Then this kid comes along, and your parents lavish love on the child, and you say, how am I going to get that love back? I know what I'll do. I'll take care of the child. And so they become the surrogate parent to the child. And the mother goes along telling everybody, look at how much he loves her. Look at how Max embraces his little sister. But every now and then he steps on her head. Every now and then he looks like he wants to strangle her. Of course. But when you're an older child, you tend to run things and control things. And you tend to demand that your control be listened to. So now as an older child, you meet somebody else. Now you meet a mate, a potential mate. And she also is an older child. Well, she wants to run you and you want to run her. And that becomes a competitive relationship. It usually doesn't work very well. But if you get the second born who's used to listening to the older child. So now you have an older son with a younger daughter. It could work out a lot better. She's willing to accept second position. Or vice versa, an older daughter with a younger son. I think sometimes you see these dynamics when you see what they nowadays are calling things like cougars or, you know, where there's somebody who's just attracted to somebody who's just clearly of a different dimension, you know, clearly not going to challenge you very much. Now, almost everybody I know who wants a relationship talks about a relationship of equality, that they want one where they're going to get challenged. But they never get it. They shy away from it. If you met somebody who is clearly your equal, you turn the other way. The one you're going to go with is the one that recreates your family drama, especially if your mother was a screamer. If your mother was a screamer and a crier and a worry wart and all that stuff, that's either what you're going to become or that's what you're going to marry. Now it gets complicated. Because even if you're a man and you look, first thing you do, according to Freud's theory of repetition compulsion, you look who's got the power. Does dad have the power or does mom have the power? Think about your own family. Who had the power? Did mom have the power or dad have the power? Can you think about it? You imitate the one who had the most power, not the one who had the least power. So you become just like the one who had the most power. Now, if your father, did your father have the most power in your house or your mother?
Mother.
Your mother. And so your mother had the most power in your house. How did you imitate her? What'd you do to gain control over things that you'd find yourself doing even in your marriage?
My mother was very understanding. She was very diplomatic. She wasn't a screamer.
Uh-huh.
She was very understanding and laid back. So that, I think, served me well.
Yeah, so that's what you do. That was your style, right? Very understanding. Don't get too angry. Lay back. Pretty good. See? Who did you imitate, Linda, your mother or your father?
I think I tend to imitate my dad. Yeah. I saw him as having the power in a very quiet, diplomatic, but strong way. Yes.
Strong way, never dealing too much with heavy emotions.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, let's not talk about strength, because he did not have strength to deal with heavy emotions.
Right.
Right? So, and therefore, you avoid heavy emotions. Right. Well, you don't really. I mean, I know you've challenged yourself quite a bit. But the tendency is to do that. So we reproduce our families. Now, that's if you're an abandoned child, if you grew up in a blaming family, then all you do is blame. For the rest of your life, you go around blaming people. What causes my misery? This problem or that problem, and here's the problem, and it's their fault, not blamers. He, she. If you listen to it enough, eventually wonder, does the person ever really think that they're creating their lives? Well, no. If you're a blamer, then you're always a victim. And if you're always a victim, then you could never see what is it that I did to create this. The other day, a friend of mine went to his wife and he said to her, I love you very much, but I noticed you lied to me about this. I asked you, and it was a simple thing, he asked. He said, could you throw away that old chicken that was in the bottom of the refrigerator? Because he doesn't like the smell of old chickens. And she said, all right, I'll throw it right away. And she said she threw it away. Now, for whatever reason, either she forgot or whatever it was, he opened the refrigerator, and there that smell got to him. And he said, let me ask you something. And this is the way he approached her, which I thought was beautiful. He said, can you tell me what is it about me that makes you kind of say to me, okay, I'll do it, and then not do it? What is about me that's getting you to not tell me the truth? Because I would rather deal with what it is about me that causes that to happen. And they had a discussion around it that was very fruitful. But you could be blaming too much. You could be demanding too much perfection. You could be one of those families where achievement is the most important thing, and you could spend the rest of your life trying to achieve. Or you could have a life that says, love conquers all. All you got to do is have a good man and a good family, and you'll be happy. Well, I wonder how many happy people there are out there who have achieved that goal. It's good to have a nice relationship. It's good to have a nice family. It's good to have a nice place to live. But not always, you know, sometimes at the end of the road, like a man who came in to see me recently, said, here I am with all this family and all these achievements, and I'm a master achiever. He said, is that all there is? Another belief is that in this love conquers all, is people often have romances that defy all advice. You tell your friends, I just met this new person, right? And this new person sounds just like the person before. Like one guy said to me, he said, I met a young woman, she's very, very beautiful. And so after he tells me a whole story, he told me about his last relationship where his girlfriend, his fiancée actually, was very attached to her father. Very attached. She, in fact, at a party once, she said, my number one man is my father. My number two man is this guy I'm going to marry. She said it to everybody, just to let everybody know. Well, they broke up. So when he told me about this new woman he met, I asked him, I said, well, you better find out about her relationship with her father. And sure as all hell, she said the same thing. I love my daddy. My daddy's number one, and so on and so forth. And I said, get ready for the ride. Get ready to get on those horses. You're going for the same ride again. You're going with somebody who is devoted to someone else. Because people get married to their parents in their minds. And they look for it. They look for it everywhere. This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. It may not sound like fun, but I'll tell you, we're going to learn a lot. There are people who in life have always a drama. It's like you don't even know what it's like to wake up in the morning without a worry. You wake up worrying. You know any people like that? We got a worry in the head. Worry in the head. Worry in the head. Worry. Worry, worry, worry. Every night, worry, worry, worry. 5, 6, 7 worries. It's almost like their brain has to spill this out, has to get off it. But then you look in their lives and you find that they had a parent who was also very worried. And they picked up this pattern. So how would that serve you? What's the idea? Are you going to recreate your family? That's one theory. And Freud's theory was, you do. Here's another theory. Oh, just one last one. In attraction to people, you could be attracted to beauty. You could be attracted to brawn, right? Muscle strength. Some people find very attractive. You could be attracted to intelligence. You could be attracted to your doctor, right? Somebody taking care of you. So if you have a caretaker who schmoozes you, you know, says, oh, you have the most beautiful feet. You have feet like a 20-year-old, right? That's all you could just, that's my ideal guy. Or you could have somebody who's intelligent, like professors. As I know so many young women marry their professors, right? Because here's a professor who's up there in school, and what's he doing with his life? All he could do is teach. Not all he could do, but he never went into his actual promised profession, like psychology professors. So what does he do? He kind of exploits the attention he gets from his students. So to the people who have no, where their lives don't function very well, who are repeating patterns over and over again, they wind up trying to find a safe place to hide. You know, they want to have a nice safe place to hide. And one of the places that people hide is in depression. Depression is a very nice place to hide. It's like going underwater. You get in a submarine, you get submerged, nobody could see you. You put your head in one of the bunks and you sleep. You get a little less oxygen than usual. You don't get as healthy. Stay a little out of the sunlight. But depression kind of swims over you like a kind of a mask, a cloud, that'll keep you from feeling too dissatisfied with your lot in life. Another way is dissociation. You can dissociate with your own dissatisfaction. You can get so lost into the image of yourself that you don't have any idea of who you are whatsoever. I think that happens a lot to why we're seeing Occupy Wall Street. You know, it's like, hey, you guys, don't you see who you were and what you've become? And they say, yeah, I like what I became. I got my yacht, I got my this, I got my that. I'm not totally happy with what my kids do and why my son won't talk to me, but look at what I've achieved. And the question of the other people is, but where are you? There's a child knocking inside your chest who wants to meet you. Now, of course, that's an easy cry for the people who don't have to say to the people who do have. But it's really nice when the people who do have begin to question each other. So you begin to hide. You can hide in relationships with machines. A lot of people get lost in their computers nowadays. You know, we talk about the wonderful gifts that Steve Jobs gave us, which I thought they were brilliant, wonderful gifts. I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't have gotten too friendly with machines. Maybe the computers have taken us across a certain pathway that maybe is not the wisest in the world. You know, I'm not putting it down, but between cell phones and you lose the beauty of writing mail and text messages, which have to be kept within a certain word limit. I mean, it's kind of a funny thing. Lastly, the escapist. Another way that we repeat our past over and over again is to spread yourself around. When you're doing one task, you do others multitasking, or always spread yourself around. Have one girlfriend, two girlfriends, three girlfriends, four girlfriends, one boyfriend, two boyfriends, three boyfriends. You could be married, but you could flirt with the guys at the office just as a backup. So that's another thing. It's, again, the same story. Remember, there are three basic instincts. And everybody lives by one of these three basic instincts. And the three basic instincts are either you believe one of these three is the most important. Is the most important thing in your life to have a personal relationship with somebody, Fact number one is number one to you also. Here's the second choice. Self-preservation. Regardless of your relationship, you're going to take care of yourself. You're going to keep yourself going. You're going to carry a bottle of water at all times. Because you never know where you can find good water. Right? Carry your medicines. Always it's you first. You got to take care of yourself. Eat the right foods. Do the right thing. And relationship comes second. Or the third one is social. So these are the three instincts. And this is almost all of nature is like this. The social instinct is, as long as I am part of the crowd, as long as I'm accepted in the family, I am then at peace. Now, you either dominate with the relationship style, the self-preservation, or the social style. Think about your three. What's most important to you? And it's like a three-legged stool. One end is going to be shorter than the other two. But which one is the short one? The short one will be, you know, let's say it's relationships. Well, then you tip over and you're not so good in social. If you rank order yourself, would you say relationships first, self-preservation second? Then you're going to find you're not so good with a lot of people. If you take the social first and self-preservation second, you're going to find you're not very good in intimate relationships. Now let's take another tact. Instead of repeating the past just to repeat it, to reproduce our childhood family, Harville Hendrix came along and said, no, we repeat our past in an attempt to get it better. And here's what he means. We do the very same thing we did before, but each time we improve. Each time we choose a little better, each time we get out a little faster, each time we recognize a little faster. And he says, the reason we repeat is so as no longer to be vulnerable to the things we were vulnerable to as children. And the repetition is a desire for health. Very interesting. So somebody goes out to a bar and picks up a guy, takes him home, right, sleeps with him and said, he didn't call me the next day, I'm in grief. And she goes out to the bar, picks up a guy, brings him home, sleeps with him, and she says, he didn't call me the next day. And the third time she does it, she says, well, I didn't expect him to call. See, and it begins to happen. And the awareness happens. Not that you should stop immediately what you're doing, but if you learn to observe yourself, and that's what therapy is about, that's what group therapy is about, you know, the whole idea of you have a group is that you can see your patterns. And you don't have to stop your patterns. You just have to see them. Harville Hendrix says, we repeat the past until we get it better. So therapy teaches you how not to repeat the past by observing yourself, observing the past. But remember about looking in a mirror. If you observe yourself and then you criticize yourself, the mirror goes black. You see, if you're criticizing yourself, you get depressed. So the idea is to look at yourself without criticism so that you can see yourself. If you look in a mirror and you say, oh, those eyes, they look terrible, I got to put on makeup or I can't look in the mirror, that's no good. If you look in those eyes and you love those tired eyes, as I very often do in the morning, and you say, good morning, you tired eyes, then it's different. Little by little, you sleep a little better. So protecting, repeating your past is in some way, according to Harville Hendrix, nourishes your soul. It protects you. I say uncover those patterns. Watch them in action. See yourself doing the same thing over and over again. Stop blaming the other person. But even if you blame them, make a record of that to yourself. Find somebody to talk to about it who doesn't want to blame the other person with you. It's nothing worse than having somebody who's angry at men when you try to talk to them about your relationship with your husband. They're going to find fault. Find somebody instead says, look, I understand the way you are. You find yourself in these situations frequently. You fall in love with somebody who worries a lot. You don't challenge them on their worry. You say, yeah, you tend to worry a lot. Yeah, you're worried about that too? Okay, I understand. How many you got today? Four? Five? It's okay. You got your worries. I think I'm going to sit here and sing my songs. See, as long as you don't let those worries invade your space, as long as what the other person does is something that could be observed but not criticized, you will find yourself in a closer, loving relationship with them. Today, we want to take your telephone calls because it's been a long time, a month. Our telephone number is 212-209-2900. We're not going to do it immediately because I brought you some special music. Somebody said our life, our average life of our listening audience was a little older than I thought it was. So I picked something for them folks. Now, here's what I picked, and I'm not going to tell you who the singer is or anything, because when I put it on, I want it to just strike your brain. And you're going to go, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. If you didn't hear it, then your father used to play it. Then your mother used to play it. Somebody played this. But what I'm going to play for you is something that I thought was a perfect theme for Occupy Wall Street, for what's going on down there. It's a theme song. It's a cowboy song. It's a cowboy song, and it's got lyrics that talk to yourself about how to undo the very thing we're talking about. And it's just an old cowboy song from 1943. So that'll be going on for you. Again, you call us at 212-209-2900. If you want to get in touch with me, the best way always is through email. Going through the website. The website is thepositivemind.com. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. What I'm asking you about to call me with is to call and ask. I'm asking you about repetitions. Patterns that you repeat over and over again, that you notice and that you observe, and what you think you can do about them. Not doing something about them like you should change them. Don't bring me self-criticism and don't bring me criticism of others. Bring me you. Bring me you and your real heart and your desire to inquire, and I welcome you. Now, last statement, I want to thank everybody who made their donations to the station, including yesterday. Yesterday, we got an enormous number of new names. I'm going to be backed up calling everybody back, but I will do it eventually. I'll get to everybody, keeping that promise. There's going to be about another 50 new names that got on the list, and I promised 5 to 10 minutes to almost everybody, which means like 500 minutes, which is like 9 days or 47 years. But I get on the phone, especially on weekends, and I call people. And if I don't meet you, just call me back. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to at least meeting with you, saying hello to you. And please, those of you who made the donations, please honor those if you haven't paid for them. And lastly, remember, there still are some people in the tally room, which is 2950, who are still taking donations for the station for the end of this fund drive. As you can imagine, with what's going on in Wall Street, we are the central place. We have now become the central place, and we're wonderful. 212-209-2900. We're going to take a short break. When I come back, my special theme song, and then we'll take your calls.
An old cowpoke been riding out one dark and windy day. Upon a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, a-plowing through the ragged skies, and up a cloudy draw. The ghost heard in the sky. Their brands were still on fire and their hooves were made of steel. Their horns were black and shiny and their hot breath he could feel. A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky, for he saw the riders coming hard and he heard their mournful cry. stars in the sky. Their faces gaunt, their eyes were blurred, and shirts all soaked with sweat. They're riding hard to catch that herd, but they ain't caught 'em yet. 'Cause they've got to ride forever on that range up in the sky. On horses snorting fire as they ride, I hear their cry. Yippee-i-oh! Loped on by him, he heard one call his name. If you want to save your soul from hell, riding on our reins, then cowboy, change your ways today, or with us you will ride, a-trying to catch the devil's herd across these endless skies.
Vaughn Monroe. Vaughn Monroe from 1943. So who could remember that, right? But it was real popular. Now think about that, and think about Riders of the Storm, right? That came from the Doors. I think they're related. Song is related, and here's what it's about. It's a cowboy song about a guy who's riding along, and he sees these dead-eyed cowboys who are searching and searching all over the place for this herd they can't catch. But they're on this path of running and running and watching, and they're saying to you, cowboy, don't join us. Don't be one of this. Find your soul first. So it's a really good metaphor for what's happening down there. I just can't imagine that they would embrace it, but somebody would, and I'm sure there's somebody out there who heard this and said, oh my God, that voice. Who is that voice? It's old Vaughn Monroe. Old Vaughn Monroe played a lot of very interesting things. In fact, I'll pay you one more selection a little later by him. It's very interesting stuff. 212-209-2900 is our number to take calls today. Michael, do we have any calls yet?
Yes, we do, Armand.
We do. Great. Yes. Great. Michael, you didn't recognize that, did you?
No, Armand, I did not. I recognized the tune, but I didn't recognize who it was by.
Yeah, it couldn't be. I mean, it had to be before your time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's take one of your calls. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille, hi, you're on the air. Welcome back. Hello there.
Hello?
Hello.
Can you hear me now?
I sure can.
Hi.
Oh, it's one of those cell phones that are dying out. Okay, I could hear you. I could hear you. Yes, could you stay in one spot? You must be calling on a cell phone, are you?
Yes, I am, but yeah. You're on Bluetooth, and I'm pulled over. I'm one of eight children, and I do repeat. We're all creatures of habit, so to speak. But it's just I'm always the caretaker of everybody else.
Are you the oldest child?
No, I'm the third youngest.
The third youngest. Oh, that happens. That happens. So in other words, the pattern kind of cycles. So as the third youngest, you're a caretaker, right?
Yes. And I know, you know, I'm one of eight, but I've never had children. Everyone has children around me. And I said, it was just so chaotic. We had three boys, three girls growing up. We were like the Brady Bunch, you know.
Sure.
And two others came by, and it was like, came by, they dropped in. By the way, you have two more brothers. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, I just want a sister.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm forever to this day, I'm in my 40s, and I'm still taking care of my brothers. It's like they're older, some younger, but it's like enough already. And it's almost like interesting.
Well, it's enough already, but keep in mind, this is the love you have. This is what you know of as love. This is what you were taught. As a result of taking care of them, your parents liked you more.
Well, I'm the glue, and I'm like, I'm burnt out of being the glue. My mother was the stronger one of the two.
Sure.
Even though my father was the sweetest man on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
She's no longer alive, but my mom's in her 70s, and she's would always say, pull up your bootstraps and march on. And that always
sure. Now, what's your name? What's your first name?
Jamie,
so you see, Jamie, think about what you're doing. You were very close to your dad. You loved him very much. And by doing this with your brothers, you're keeping your father close to you. And the problem is that you would have to give up your dad in order to move on. And that's hard to do. You have to give up that kind of love, the love that comes through approval. That's very hard to do. So the only way you could ever substitute is substitute your family. And the way you substitute your family, I recommend group therapy. I think a group is a very good idea, or even if it's a support group, any kind of group, where you could get into a different kind of family and not take care of the other people and have friends who you don't take care of, which I know is tough for you. And the minute you give that up, as soon as you give it up, you're going to feel pain. You're going to feel an excruciating pain with the loss of not knowing who you are anymore, because all you know about yourself is you're a caretaker.
Yes.
But you're proud.
Well, I do pet rescue. I do pet rescue, too. So that's my salvation. You know, I do pet rescue. And
but again, that's not your salvation. Well, no, that's your repetition. No. It's all good intention. I think pet rescue is wonderful. But stop rescuing. Stop taking care of.
Yeah, we just fix and feed now. So, you know, it's interesting.
So let somebody, you should be one of your pets that get rescued. Let somebody rescue you.
Yes.
You know, Jamie, but I'll tell you, you're very brave for calling in. I appreciate your accepting the feedback.
Yes.
But remember, what even doing good, when you're a compulsive giver, just doing good in projects sometimes is the wrong idea.
It could be the worst.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm very aware of what I'm doing wrong. I am.
Not wrong, what you're doing.
Yes.
That's
I'm aware. I'm definitely aware. I'm a Sagittarius, so I'm very aware.
Nice to speak to you, Jamie.
Yes, thank you.
Sure.
Bye now.
212-209-2900, a Bluetoothed woman. When she said, I'm talking about Bluetooth, I had a picture of that. It just appeared in my eyes. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes, thank you for taking me. Funny, because I actually have a similar situation to the previous caller. However, I think I've been noticing a repetition of meeting women who have problems with their father.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting, because when I was a teenager and I had my puppy love, even her, and it's weird because I just thought about it as I was driving and trying to, you know, associate it with something. And,
good for you.
She had a problem with her father. She had disapproval issues. He was really strict. He, you know, just over-controlling, I guess. And,
sure, give me your first name.
Make it okay up. With you, I'd rather make Eddie. Eddie.
I'll call you Eddie. Call you Eddie anytime. Eddie, okay, so let's get underneath this for you, all right, if it's okay with you. So now I have to ask you, were you your mother's good friend?
I would say yes.
And would you say that one of the things your mother had to deal with, use you for, or got a lot of benefit from you, was because she had certain troubles with your dad?
And, you're right.
See? And you became, in effect, her surrogate parent. You became kind of like, you know, you and she are fighting against daddy. This pattern emerges. Now, please don't blame yourself. It's almost natural with mothers to do this, you know. They can't get along with their husbands. They turn to their children, and their children set up a pattern of always finding women who are in some way abused by men and having to help bail them out.
Wow. I wouldn't disagree. My mother definitely had certain problems with my father and him being a more responsible individual when I was born. So I guess that makes sense to me.
So the thing you need. Okay, here we go. So the search to find your father and to make peace with him has been through women, by battling with him. You know, people like you become policemen. Don't tell me you're a policeman. It would kill me.
No, no, I work at a health food store.
Okay. So, in a health food store, so you're helping save people from the ogres who sell those poison chemicals, right?
Correct. I work in the vitamin section, and I offer a lot. I facilitate a lot of nutritional and supplemental information. Correct.
Sure, but you don't get many contact with men. You see, men is what you need. You need a buddy, a friend, a pal, a group of guys. And that, I know, Eddie, is something that you tend not to go toward. You tend to go to the women instead and save them. But what
interesting enough, I've been seeking more male friends and you know, seeking to bond more and with my neighbor and his you know, associates and his buddies. So I think I guess I've been aware of it to a certain degree.
Good idea. Good idea. It's more important than a relationship. Find men you could trust. You know, I run one men's group. There's no openings in it right now. And these men have learned to trust each other, and I've watched how their lives have unfolded.
I do have trust issues, though.
Of course you do. Yeah. Number one, not only didn't you trust your own father, but you also, your mother said, don't trust your father or I won't love you.
She probably said it
in some way, sure.
Because she even has trust issues with him.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Wow. Okay.
I'm sorry. It was a loaded phone call. All righty.
Oh, great. I really appreciate it, sir. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.
Okay, thank you.
212-209-2900. At the very end, Eddie, who bonded with me on the phone, who laughed with me, said the name Sir when he said goodbye to me, saying that, yeah, but I fall in that category too. Right? It's good, Eddie. My name is Armand. I'd like you to call back one day and give me a real name. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. What brave people we have on the air today. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Yes.
My name is Tony. I'm the baby from nine kids.
Oof.
Three of us are left. I'm in my 60s. And my dad used to punish me, and my mom always said that she tried to defend me from being punished. What I gathered from my life is I seek women who are expressionless, are very quiet, and I think I can rescue them.
Yeah.
That's my life.
You're a rescue guy, too. Now, your mom telling you about how she protected you from your dad. See, it's the same kind of thing. Dad is evil.
Yes.
And why is mom telling you? Either she protects you or she doesn't. She shouldn't be telling you.
I didn't really believe her.
Yeah. Did you love your father?
I was more afraid of him than loving him.
Okay, but if you think about it now. Did he he die? Did he die, Dad?
He died when I was 12 years old.
Wow.
I'm in my 60s.
Wow. How did you get by from 12 years on without a dad?
I stayed in my room, and I drew a lot of pictures, and I guess I had a lot of friends, little friends, when I was in Catholic school.
What kind of pictures did you draw?
Things about war. I was always battling something, so I could always win the wars when I drew pictures.
So there you were as a child, age 12, who's being told what an ogre his father is, right, and what a battle it is at home. Dad dies, you lose the chance to get close to him, right? You're coming into pubescence now. You've got all this testosterone rushing through your body. What do? You fire guns. You shoot guns. You build tanks. You make war things. That's perfectly fine. But you grew up and you gave that up on some level. You must now be an architect or something.
I am a graphic designer.
Oh, okay, I was close. Are you drawing anything pretty?
I do a lot of watercolors.
Yeah, that's quite a shift. That's quite a shift for you.
Yes,
so you've
is.
Done a lot of work on yourself. So let me ask you, Tony, who's your closest friend?
Person at work. A man.
A man. And how close are you to him?
We express our childhood experiences, and we seem to have similar childhood experiences about family not believing in us, and somehow we survive.
Wow. good friend to have. Good friend. Yeah. Nurture that friendship. Give it the top place.
He's the only male friend that I have in my life.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's why I asked you, you know. Yeah. I asked you because I imagined that it would be very tough to form male friends. See if you can extend that a little.
Okay.
See if there's somebody else in your life. And I can say, even go to meetings, go to organizations, go down to Oppose Wall Street. You know, go down there. Just look around. You'll never find where a buddy could be.
I will try that.
Okay, Tony. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Sure.
Goodbye.
212-209. Ah, oh, my heart. I mean, it's like, yeah. Almost as if this stuff is real. Maybe we need a break. Maybe we need to take a little unexpected break.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
When we finally kiss goodnight.
How's that for your break? There's a couple of people out there who are just kind of their heads are bopping from side to side because they haven't heard this for 40 years. 60 years. No, 50 years. But it's right here. 212-209-2900. Let's take another of your precious calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, I'm on the air.
You are on the air.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
I'm great.
Good. I always listen to your radio station, your radio program. Unfortunately, today I didn't catch the question, but...
question was about repeating your past.
Okay.
About why, what kind of things do you repeat in your past? I explained how people repeat in their past. And if you don't catch the beginning of the program, you could always go to the website, either WBAI.org or The Positive Mind, and you could hear it from the beginning.
Okay.
But I'm glad you're on the air. What's your name?
I am too. My name is Joy.
Okay, Joyce. Mm-hmm.
That's my alias today.
I know. I know. I could tell by the...
Everyone's talking about mothers and fathers. Can I talk about a partner? Is that
sure,
okay?
Sure.
Okay. So I've been in a relationship for 17, off and on, 17 years. And we have a cycle of being together or not being together. We live in the same house. And I just kind of want to get out of the cycle. We have children together as well. So, and it's very challenging because he initiated the breakup. And yet we still function as if we are still together. I know it sounds mushy.
I've seen many situations like this.
And so I find that I do repeat the pattern of functioning as if we are still a couple periodically, every few months or so. And I'm just trying to unravel myself out of it.
Very tough to do on your own. Very, very difficult, especially with him present. See, if he weren't there, it would be different. But I understand your situation. And there's a person I know who specializes in helping people in that situation specifically.
Okay.
You know, and it's our own Stephanie Dombra. That's something that she's worked with quite a bit.
Okay.
And helped people with. So I think you might reach out, you know, to Stephanie and see if there's a... see what she has to say to her. Maybe send me an email. I'll forward it on to her, and she'll write you back.
Okay.
All right? Because it's very difficult when you're in the middle of it sometimes. Somebody once said to me, it's like being in the middle of a cyclone. There's a certain spot in the middle of a cyclone where you don't feel the effects of the cyclone. It's like in the eye of the cyclone.
Mm.
And they said the trouble is that nobody knows how to move with the eye of the cyclone. So what happens is they get caught up in either trying to get out or trying to get up or trying to get down. And in your situation, you're in the cyclone, you know, and you're in the eye of it, but then you get out of the eye of it. And that's when it doesn't work. But you need to talk to somebody about this in depth, yes. Because it's not, don't criticize yourself. Don't put yourself down. It's your way of holding love at the moment.
That sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Joyce, whoever you are.
Okay.
212-209-2900. Time for one more caller, if you don't mind. Hi there. Let's take another call. You're on the air. 212-209-2900. You have to turn down your radio.
Hi there. Let's take another call. You're on the air.
Hello. Better go to the next one, Michael. I think... 212-209-2900.
All right, hold on one moment.
Sure. Can't give dead air.
Okay, here we go.
Hi there, you're on the air.
Yes.
Yes.
I've been in a relationship for about, 6 months with a girl. And I don't know, I just keep trying to find, problems that are wrong with her, and I've done that in a series of relationships, and I keep wanting to break up, but I kind of feel like I know I should stay with this person.
Are you generally a perfectionist?
I try to be, but I'm also very, I'm sloppy, in a lot of the ways I get things done. But
So it seems that you're married to somebody else. Since we got about 3 minutes, do you mind if I jump all the way in?
Yes.
Okay. What about your mom?
That's a long story.
I'm sure.
She joined a cult and brought me with her, and I grew up with her in a church.
In a church. And are you at all close to her now?
No, I kind of cut off relationship.
Completely cut off relationship with her.
Yeah. Not in a hostile way. She's just too crazy, always has financial issues, et cetera, et cetera.
So your idea of a loving mother is somebody too crazy who's always got issues, and it's hard for you to trust any woman.
Okay.
It would be hard for you to trust. It's very hard for you to keep looking at it, And you probably pick people who have strong needs as well. So yep. I'm saying there's some pattern of love that you developed that at the moment doesn't work. And I wish we had more time to talk about it, but the next time we get together, if you call in, I promise I'll address it.
Okay,
but I say it goes all the way back there.
I feel like I'm very self-aware of all these issues. I understand, you look for what your parents gave you, but I've tried to deal with that, and I find myself in the same situation, just always finding fault with somebody.
Yeah, I hear. We'll try again. Thank you very much for calling in.
All right, thank you.
Bye. Sure, bye-bye. Well, this is Armand DeMille with Vaughn Monroe. Love being with you all, my friends. Love hearing you on the air. I'll be back with you on Tuesday. Tuesday. Next Tuesday at 1 o'clock. And every time I hear the program, I love you a little bit more.
Just a little bit more. Every day I want you just a little bit more than I did the day before. You'll never guess how deep my love is, not even in your wildest dreams. But just so you'll get it clear, compared to my love, my dear, the Mississippi River's just a stream. Every day I love you just a little bit more, just a little bit more, just a little bit more. Every day I love you just a little bit more than I did the day before.
Positively minded life. This is listener-sponsored, commercial-free, community radio WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org coming up at 3 p.m., 3 o'clock. Talk back with Hugh Hamilton. Do stay tuned.
On November 3rd at 10 a.m., the people, the 99%, will hold a people's